The following is a presentation of Second City Works, delivered by your earbuds at WGN Plus.
Welcome to the Second City Works Getting to Yes And. I'm Kelly Leonard, Executive Director of Insights and Improvisation at the world-famous Second City Theater. This podcast is about navigating work and life without a script. Improvisation is a practice in collaborating more effectively, tapping into your full creative potential, and building ensembles who can both support and challenge us. If you like what you hear, please rate us on iTunes and share the podcast through your social media channels. Help us extend the conversation. This is Getting to Yes And.
Working all day for a mean little man with a clip on tight and a rub on tan. He's got me running around the office like a dog around a track. But when I get back home, you're always there to rub my back. Hey, Julie.
My guests today on Getting to Yes And are Dr. Sylvia Smith and Nick John. Dr. Smith is the executive director of Giant Steps, an organization designed to provide quality educational and vocational services for individuals living with autism, and it's based in Lisle, Illinois. She has served as vice president and chief learning officer for an international technology company, working with other companies such as Sears, GM, and Chrysler. She has researched, designed, and developed See and Read learning tools, a suite of reading intervention tools that help improve fluency and comprehension. Nick John was a member of the Second City Toronto's main stage cast from 1991 to 1993. While there, he won a Dora Maver Moore Award for Best Writing and Performance in a Revue. He was also an original cast member of the Tony Award-winning musical The Drowsy Chaperone. Nick has been teaching improvisation since 1993. In 2015, Nick, along with his co-teacher, Molly Fisher, helped design Second City's Improv for ASD class. He has taught all over the world. Nick and Sylvia, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Thanks.
Sylvia, let's start with some very basic understandings. When you have to explain what the autism spectrum or autism spectrum disorder is, how do you describe it to people who don't know anything about it?
Well, it's kind of interesting because autism does fall under a spectrum. So you can have those that are very impacted to the point of having no communication skills and the inability even to feel like you're communicating or can get through, all the way to those that are very high-functioning and extremely cognitive and fall into the gifted range, and you wouldn't know it except maybe they have somewhat of a quirky personality, maybe a little shy, maybe a little different, but they seem okay, you know, in the big world of people. But when you talk to people about autism, I try to help people see, it's not a disease. It doesn't mean that everything's over. It just means they learn differently. They act differently. And it's okay, especially if we help them, especially on an earlier, when they're very young, to kind of help the parents and this young person to learn who they are and be okay with who they are.
Yeah, that's interesting. And then, so for Giant Steps, the organization that you run, you do just that, right? You provide a variety of services for people on all manner of the spectrum?
Exactly. You know, we take the individuals, the students, where they are, and we help them grow from there. Now, as a Giant Steps in Lisle, we work strictly with public schools. Typically, the students at the public schools, for whatever reason, have difficulty reaching, and it's not that the public schools don't have the capability, it's just that we at Giant Steps, because of our situation and our facilities and our resources, have a broader footprint and ability to meet the needs of these kids. So yes, we have kids that are very impacted, to kids that are very high functioning and have a very high IQ, yet they're unable to kind of get along in the regular classroom because of behavioral or communication issues.
Right. Nick, you've been a long-time Second City performer and teacher. How did you end up connecting the practice of improvisation to ASD?
Well, like a lot of things, it starts with my daughter who's on the spectrum and thinking what's out there for creatively. She was getting a lot of therapy and there was no play for other than what I was providing. And concurrently with that, I was teaching autism for anxiety here. And I did the sort of quick little jump in my head of, Well, if we can teach autism, or rather, improv for anxiety, mm-hmm. it's not much of a stretch to teach improv for autism.
Mm-hmm.
So I pitched that, and lo and behold, here we are.
I love Second City has such a like reflexive yes and approach, right?
Yeah.
So you didn't find a lot of resistance to this?
No, it was jumped on.
Okay.
It took a while to get going. We had like a one of those intensive weekends, and we tried that as a pilot program. Then after that went, we sort of hemmed and hawed a bit and sort of kind of strung it out. And then finally we like did our one class and boom, here we are.
Take me back to the very first class that you had, because that you had to be anxious walking in that classroom, like whether this thing was going to work or not.
Man, yeah. And it was like a spectrum. The spectrum was there.
In
right?
the room, yeah.
In the room. We had some very shy individuals. We had kiddos who were like brilliantly smart, kiddos who had like a misconception about Second City, thinking that it was all sketch comedy and what's this improv thing.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of resistance going on there. And by about the afternoon of the first day of the intensive, they were all aboard.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just took them a couple of like hours of just, we're going to play, mm-hmm. and whatever you do is going to be fine. And they kind of all bought into it.
What you're describing doesn't sound any different from a beginning Second City improv class.
No, it really is like a beginning Second City improv class, except maybe we take it a little slower.
A little slower, yeah.
Yeah.
Sylvia, when Second City, and now in this case, Second City approached you, right?
I'm not sure exactly. I think our communication specialist helped in that communication, our setting up the communication. And honestly, the first time I heard about it, I thought, wow, this is great. This is a perfect fit. Because what I knew of improv, it just fits so perfectly, because communication is an issue for a lot of our students. And there's no wrong way of acting in an improv class. Everything's okay. The quirks are encouraged. The eccentric behaviors fit in. It's okay. So when I heard about Second City and us maybe partnering, I just jumped at the chance, because I think it's an opportunity for all kids, but especially kids with autism, to really find a niche for themselves and become comfortable in their own skin.
Should I be surprised that I'm surprised that you weren't more trepidatious about it? You know what I'm saying?
No.
Like, there's a part of it. Like,
I was excited. I thought, this is great. Let's get started tomorrow, maybe.
Okay.
But we had to wait a little bit to get it on the road.
So I'm curious about that. In your past, have you worked with other sort of arts organizations that have maybe brought artistic expression and exercises and techniques to this community?
Well, we haven't in the same manner for which Second City brings it.
Yeah.
Second City brings it in a unique kind of package that is fun, and there's no, the word therapy is not associated with it. We do a lot of music. We do a lot of, impromptu motion and action, but typically it's within an educational environment, something with goals and that sort of thing. Improv is just what it says.
Yeah.
You do what you feel like, and Nick and Molly lead the class in such a way that it just, they set up prompts to help our students to think about it and begin to see themselves in that, and hopefully that communication practice that they have in the class begins to transfer out into the real world. So there's huge wins in this particular program.
And you mentioned Molly Fisher, who is Nick's co-teacher. I was just at a conference, and we had 20 minutes to speak, and we finished with we had a minute left. And so I was trying to think of some of my favorite Second City quotes to kind of leave the audience with. And the one that I pulled out was something that Sheldon Patinkin, who is an early mentor of mine here and an early founder of Second City. We all heard that term, your team is only as good as its weakest member. And in improvisation, Sheldon says it's different than that. In improvisation, your ensemble is only as good as its ability to compensate for its weakest member, because everyone in an ensemble is going to be weak week at a different time because we were all different because we all need to lift each other up. And I know when I visited Giant Steps to sort of check out the scene, I really felt like it was ensemble in action, that recognizing that everyone is going to be at a different space in a different time on a different day at a different hour, and we're all there to work together. I mean, that's the feeling I got.
Without a doubt, because we never know what's going to go on, because our kids do have personality issues and things that go on like that. But the whole organization, the teachers, the therapists, the PAs, everybody gets into a rhythm with our kids to help them to move through whatever type of situation they are. Even when they get really excited and they're happy, sometimes their behaviors become exaggerated, and we have to help them learn to keep it inside and more manageable to when they have a meltdown. At the same time, you treat them with dignity and you help them move through it, and you give them tools to help them learn to live with themselves and learn how to overcome some of these issues that they might have. I mean, I tell people I literally work in the Disneyland for special needs, because I truly do see miracles big and small happen every day. Now, they may not be a miracle to you, but to me, and knowing the context and where they came from, they're huge. And yes, we are kind of a floating improv ensemble every day.
Yeah. So, Nick, you know, again, the more we're talking about this, I'm not seeing any distinguishing difference between this community and the broader community that I live in and walk in interactions I see happen on the street every single day.
Yeah, there's none.
Right? So I'm curious with regard to thinking to just you as an improv teacher, mm-hmm. and then the leap into this particular program, what Sylvia brings up is this idea of like moving through the difficult moment, right? Rick Thomas, the teacher, calls it falling into the crack in the game,
uh-huh.
Right? What have you found as a teacher? What improv pedagogy are you drawing from when you're trying to get people and give them agency to be able to take their what they might perceive as their failure or their obstacle and to get over it and be able to still, you know, have agency themselves?
Well, a lot of it is meeting where they are at this point in mm-hmm. time. I have a teaching plan, a lesson plan like any teacher would have, but there's a whole lot of brackets and sidebars and tangents that I can sort of pull out of my internal Rolodex. So if a student's not getting it in one aspect, we'll find that aspect where he or she will get it and we'll meet them there.
Mm-hmm.
So they're telling us as much as we're telling them. And it really is that two-way conversation, that communication that, you know, improv sort of like enables.
Mm-hmm.
I find that I'm as much of an improviser when I'm teaching as they are.
Right. Specifically, what's an exercise or a game that you have found that's been effective that you've used in all these sessions? Is there one that's sort of carried through?
There's one, and I don't have a name for it, but somebody comes in and forms like a statue in a scene,
mm-hmm.
And they declare it, I am a tree in the middle of a field. And then just everybody jumps in, I'm a bird sitting on that tree. And together we build this picture, this sort of tableau mm-hmm. of things. And it really helps them just yes-anding. And they're amazed at like even how crazy their thought might be, how it seems to just inevitably fit into what this picture will be.
Okay, that's interesting you brought that up, because Sylvia, I was reading some of the work that you've done and you've written about before, and I found a quote that seems to tie with what Nick's talking about. You said, quote, students with Asperger's syndrome, this is an early paper, have difficulty distinguishing between information that is essential and information that is not. And I wonder,
correct.
I wonder if in that, part of what Nick's talking about is we're teaching you how you adding to the story make the complete story, and you start to understand maybe your small role inside the bigger thing that's going on.
And it also says, you know, essential versus non-essential is an issue for some of our students to understand the two. But in an improv class, whatever they're thinking is approved and applauded. And that begins to build independence and resilience without them even knowing, because they're okay if they're talking about a tree and they say they want to be a tractor.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's all right. They make it work, because then somebody else will play off a tractor by a tree. And all of a sudden, their thought processes fit in and are okay, and they see their ideas building by other people. And so even though it's essential or not essential, in an improv class, they can begin to see how they can make their thought process fit into a larger communication with other people.
Yeah, this, again, it reminds me, and I think we've talked about this before, when my mom got dementia, and I'm the guy who wrote the Yes And book, I did not Yes And any of those conversations. So she would be off in a flight of fancy, and I try to get her back to what I considered to be the reality. And it was only much later when I heard an episode of This American Life with two improvisers who decided to apply their improvisational understanding to their mom who was having dementia, and they just yes-anded the reality that person was in, because their reality is their reality. And this also, right, and it speaks to a broader thing. I mean, we're walking around with these misconceptions every day between all kinds of individuals. We don't understand what everyone is going through, and we make assumptions and we have biases because, you know, someone's coming in hot from somewhere, but we have no idea if they were just in a car accident, you know, or someone just broke up with them, and that can change completely what's in the room. And it strikes me that what you both are dealing with in these, in the classroom setting, is this sort of hyper version of that, right? That this is something that is sort of a constant in some of these folks being in existence.
Well, and if they can begin to feel that tolerance, that they're okay, you're okay type of situations, and they practice this, and the way Molly and Nick set up the situations and draw in everybody, they see they're part of the group and they're adding to the group, which is may not be part of their life experiences outside of the world and outside of Giant Steps. So the more they practice feeling like everyone else, or feeling like whatever they do can be built upon or is respected and applauded, then that just helps to give them that confidence to some degree. And the more they practice it, the more they feel it, hopefully that transfer becomes real in the outside world.
Sylvia, so we did the first set of classes. What was the response? I'm curious what was the response both from the kids and from the parents of the kids.
Well, they just loved it. I mean, we had some kids that, like I'm sure all the other classes that Second City has run at first, were kind of not too sure about it.
Yeah.
They just sat on the outside and kind of ran the perimeter of the room. But by the time, you know, 15, 20 minutes gets in, and the way Nikki and Molly do it, they don't insist that the individual come in. They just kind of invite them in at their own level of comfort, and just a little bit at a time and a little bit at a time. And before they know it, they're in the big thick of it and doing the actions to whatever degree they feel comfortable with. And that's like one of the dads that had a son there who has, he's a higher functioning kiddo, but he has communication issues, and understanding how he talks with other people and what the reactions are, he couldn't believe how his son was jumping in and becoming part of the group, because that wasn't who he is outside. Being part of a group is not how you would describe this particular, young person. And most of the parents stayed and watched, because they were in disbelief at what these kids were actually doing, because they never see them being part of a group. You know, being a loner is more like the characteristics that you tend to put on an individual with autism. Improv brings out that feeling of being part, which is so important and so rewarding.
Yeah, and what you've just described is the formation of the Second City in many ways, because we have for many, many years, I think our entire existence, we've often called ourselves the Island of Misfit Toys. It's a lot of people who show, you know, right, Nick?
Yes.
Like, all these people show up here who are like, they don't really fit anywhere else. No. They find each other. There's the only connection they have is they allow themselves to be in a room with others and build and play. And they learn this skill and this practice. And I'm curious, too. There was a gentleman I worked with at a radio station whose kid had some communication issues. I don't know if they were on the spectrum, and I think this was before we had the classes specifically for it. But he entered him in like a level A beginning class, and what he said to me was, like, for 4 or 5 hours after the class, the level of communication was off the charts compared to where it was before. It dropped off after that, but there was an immediate effect. Nick, is that something you've experienced?
Yeah, and, you know, something that springs to mind, too, is how not like therapy it is. You know?
Right.
There's something to be said for people just having fun and playing. And you get
And laughter,
exactly. And you get a lot of resistance initially because they think, yet again, this is going to be a program where I'm going to be told what to do and how to behave. And when the brakes are off, you can see them just really start to have fun and connect with each other. Some of the best stuff we see in our classes is the stuff that happens during the breaks. After like a couple of exercises, the students are talking to each other, which is something they would not normally do. And we always end with a little bit of a circle game where we say one thing that you've learned today, or what you observed in another student that you like, the student standing next to you. And we feel that's really important, too, because it's just a nice way to reaffirm that support that we give each other.
Sylvia, so in this world that you live in, what are the biggest barriers that you face to helping this community?
Wow, that's kind of a big question. I think understanding, we in today's world, for whatever reason, find ourselves kind of like on this treadmill that goes very, very quickly. And oftentimes, we, a population, don't have time to slow down and think about what someone else is coming to the party with. And if we don't fit into their system, their schedule, then they don't have time to think about us. And that's with everybody. You can see there's a sense of impatience with people. And individuals with autism are wonderful, but they need patience because they may not do it the way you think it should be. Something should be done right away. And I think the biggest challenge now is getting people to understand that they are just like anyone else. They just tend to process differently and or communicate differently, even if they're nonverbal. It doesn't mean there's nobody home in the brain. That has, you know, autism doesn't mean that you're cognitively impaired. Some are, but most aren't. But just giving people the benefit of the doubt, letting them be who they are, and just being accepting of who these kids and young adults are.
That's so relevant in terms of this idea of slowing down patient communication. We just interviewed Leonard Mlodinow, who is a author and a theoretical physicist, and he co-wrote a book with Stephen Hawking. And he collaborated with Hawking over 8 years, and this was at the point where Hawking would twitch an eye to peck out a letter, and he could do 6 letters in a minute. And so when Leonard was say he goes, at first it was just excruciating to have these conversations. And if you tried to get ahead of him and you were wrong, Hawking would get really mad at you because he was the most brilliant man in the world. And so what he talked about is learning to actually exist in that conversation in a different way. He would take his time, listen, sometimes think where he might be going, allow himself to go there a little bit, but always come back. And he said, he goes, it became like a meditative practice and made me a better listener just in my life. I slowed myself down and became kind of a super listener. And I really thought that was kind of a provocative thing.
And that's really true, because just think about, when you turn on your computer, we live in this digital world, and if we click something and it doesn't pop up within seconds, we just take so long, and we feel ourselves getting a little agitated if we want to move between screen to screen. That is where we are, and I think improv helps us to stop, look, and listen, and help ourselves to understand that listening to people is a skill and an art. But everybody needs to be listened to and given that space to be who they are.
Mm-hmm. Nick, so you're at this point now. You've done this. You've done this program. You've worked here. You have a daughter with ASD. What do you wish for? Like, what's the, like? Do you have a when you think about this? It's like, man, this would make the world a better place if this existed.
Yeah. Maybe it's just an awareness of people being different. And I know that sort of really sort of opens up a Pandora's box, but just an awareness of that we all don't operate in the same way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we talk about sort of a neurotypical population, how we can, you know, we operate faster, but even in the real world,
the world,
where, you know, you're talking to somebody behind a counter, what is that person really saying to you? What, mm-hmm. How are you connecting? In which ways? If there's an issue at work, how do you skirt around it? How do you tackle it without losing sight of yourself, but also meeting the other person, maybe not in the middle, but even where they are?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that would make the world a little better.
Totally. Okay, before I'm going to ask you each for a yes and story, which is how we always end the podcast, but tell our audience where they can get more information, Sylvia, on your program and the improv program at Giant Steps.
Well, you can find us at www.mygiantsteps.com for program information across, you know, from kindergarten through young adults. But for the improv classes that are coming up, you can go to our website and click on our Second City tab. But also, we've got information. You can get a hold of me at ssmith@mygiantsteps.org, and I can get you wherever you need to go, or if you just want to talk, I'm happy to visit with you.
And I know at secondcity.com, if you click on the training center, they've got information on the program as well. Okay, Nick, I'm going to start with you with the yes and story. So we always end the podcast with this, which is, you know, the improv principle. You can't say no, you can't say yes, but you have to say yes and in order to explore and heighten. Do you have a this is such a softball for you question.
Yeah.
Give me a yes and story.
I try to do one thing that scares me a year, which is mostly me yes-anding myself, but one year I said, I'm going to sing in public, not as part of a show, but as in a band. And I decided I want to have a country band. So I approached my friend. I said, hey, I want to form a band. Would you play with me? And he said, what do you play? Not much. But we went there, and we had a really fun run of it. We were called the Puddle Jumpers. We had anywhere between 3 and 5 people playing.
All right, so you formed a country band. That's a yes and. Sylvia, give us a yes and story, if you will.
Well, mine isn't quite as fun as Nick's, but I have to say, when I went back to graduate school as an adult and had a family, and after I finished my master's degree, I think, whoa, what next? And one of my professors said, you should go on and get your doctorate. And I said, oh, gosh, no, I have a family, I have to work, I have all these things in front of me. It's just not the right time. And with my husband's support and several of my props, I decided to go ahead and just bite the bullet and do it. And honestly, it was the best decision I ever made next to getting married and having kids, mm-hmm. because having that degree a lot has opened up avenues and journeys for me that honestly I never would have thought I'd get to take advantage of. So, yes, and, you know, you say, no, but yes, it was a great decision. And so I just hope everybody thinks about just going ahead and trying it. Don't say no, just try it. There's always a path to yes. It might not look the way you thought it was going to be, but that path is always there if you just keep your eyes open and your heart open to new adventures.
Amen. Sylvia Smith and Nick John, thanks for coming on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. And I look forward to our new classes coming up this summer, starting on June 16th out in Giant Steps.
Well, I've been working in a coal mine, going down, working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down, working in a coal mine, going down, working in a coal mine, whoop, about to slip down, 5 o'clock in the morning, I'm up before the sun, when my workday is over, too tired for having fun, I've been working in a coal mine, going down, working in a coal mine. Okay.